Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon from Florida's Space Coast, home of the Kennedy Space Center, Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, and the greatest concentration of true steely-eyed missile men and women anywhere in the world. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 27th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, for the next hour, we are going to talk about our nation's space program with a focus this week on the home team right here in Florida. Our state representatives are gathering in Tallahassee right now for the annual legislative session, and we will soon learn if our lawmakers here have enough vision to give us a winning home field advantage in the competition for future space business. And given all that we know and really don't know yet about the future of NASA and our national space program, it has certainly never been so critical that Florida does the right thing now, because this is not just a problem, of course, for Brevard County, but an issue that really is important for the entire state. To help us understand what we're going to be facing and what some of the possible solutions are, we will be joined shortly by our good friends, Frank DiBello, president of Space Florida, and Mark Nappi, vice president and Florida site manager for United Space Alliance. Along the way, if you have a question or comment, as always, please feel free to give us a call here in the studio at 768-1240 or star 1240 for all local AT&T wireless customers. If you happen to be listening to us online right now live at WMMBAM.com, then feel free to call us from anywhere in the nation at 321-768-1240. Or also you can send us email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Oh my gosh. Did anyone else hear this music in the back of their heads at any time this past week? You know, the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House finally got their chance to strike back at NASA and the White House, making it clear that there will be no future for NASA unless someone begins to clearly articulate what the future of NASA will be. Now, I'm not trying to say that the Congress represents the dark side of the force in this little cinematic metaphor. But in fact, it does seem like there are heroes and villains in every corner of this story, depending on what your view about what the future of human spaceflight should look like and who should be responsible for what part of that future. Well, for what it's worth, here's my personal view as host of Space Talk of the situation right now. I think that on the good side, I think it's great that NASA's budget request has a nice sized increase. I think the idea of making a major investment in game-changing space technology is absolutely necessary and long overdue. In general, I think it's a very good idea to turn as much of the operational aspects of spaceflight over to private industry as soon as possible, so long as there is a sustainable commercial market for that service, if there were no government dollars involved. And I don't think we're there yet. I think that the suggestion that a commercial launch firm won't be as safety conscious with humans on board as maybe NASA would be is absurd. I think standards will be set and met before our astronauts take flight in anyone's rockets, no matter who they're built by. And in fact, sometimes I wonder if the government way of doing human spaceflight, now listen carefully, maybe demands too much in an attempt to be space safe. I mean, spaceflight is never 100% safe deal. It is a calculated risk every time you launch. Proper risk mitigation is the name of the game. But at the same time, speaking of games, you know, ours is not a culture now where I can keep my front door unlocked as I did growing up in Minnesota. Ours is a culture that says our children are not allowed to play dodgeball at recess anymore for fear someone might get hurt, have their feelings hurt, get injured. I sometimes fear we are no longer willing to take the kind of risks that are necessary to continue to be a great nation. So I think the commercial folks can probably handle the job as well as the government. Let's see what happens. I do not like the idea of spending a bunch of money on Earth monitoring satellites when it seems the purpose of those missions may have more political value than scientific benefits. If we can remove the politics from that data, then I think we really do need as much Earth observation satellites as we can possibly get up there. Today's events in Chile with the earthquake and the tsunami heading toward Hawaii proves that real-time monitoring of Earth conditions from space is absolutely something we need to pay attention to. Most importantly, though, I do not like the idea of canceling Constellation. That, however, does not mean I automatically favor continuing the program with its original architecture and flight hardware. I've never understood why the Ares 1 was becoming so expensive to develop and was going to be so expensive to fly. But at the same time, I don't want to see the $9 billion already spent on that program go to waste. And I certainly don't want to see another $2 billion spent to shut it down and then have nothing to show for it. I think the Constellation needs to continue. Maybe perhaps with a different destination. Maybe perhaps with a different deadline. Perhaps with a new rocket that could be called, the Ares 1B. But it should continue because that, I think, would fill the one hole, the one gap, if you will, in NASA's proposed budget that most bothers me. And it would seem a great majority of the rest of the world is bothered by it too. By canceling Constellation, that's sending the signal that we are turning our backs on the spirit of exploration and innovation that is part of the foundation of what made the United States a great nation. Now, that said, just this week, NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden said that the ultimate goal of all this research and technology and the work that will be done on the space station by extending its life, which is a good thing, by the way, is to prepare ourselves for Mars someday. Well, I can buy into that. That sounds like a good idea. So maybe what we ought to do is let's fold all of this research and technology, this beefing up of the commercial launch industry, continuing to operate the space station into the program that we know as Constellation. I mean, let's keep the logos and patches and PowerPoint art. Let's not lose some of the branding here. Give Constellation a new direction and keep the dream alive for all of us. Well, finally, a word about the space shuttle. You know, if it is possible to continue to fly the shuttle for a few more years while other means of transportation is developed and Congress and the White House is willing to further increase NASA's budget so that flying the shuttle doesn't mean we have to sacrifice some of the program, then I think I'm all for it. I think if you scale back the shuttle program, let's say to something like 2 flights a year, retain, the bare minimum core workforce that you need to do that work. Perhaps you'll retire an orbiter. You probably use another one for spare parts. Probably keep only one of the orbiter processing facility hangars open. Process the vehicle with a 5-day, one-shift operation. You do all those things, I'm willing to bet you could sustain a shuttle flight operation for some time to come and do it relatively inexpensively. And I'm sure that there are opinions out there both ways. I think at the same time, we need to continue to work diligently toward replacing the shuttle because as great of a machine as it is, as much as we understand about it and operate it, it's more safely than ever before, there are still unknowns out there. And it's those unknown unknowns that make me nervous and probably make others nervous and certainly gives me a nightmare or two before every shuttle launch. So what does all this mean for Florida? Well, what are our opportunities and our challenges? Is this all good news, bad news, or something in between? Well, when we come back from our first break, we'll talk with two of the state's most important space professionals and hear what they plan to tell Florida's legislature next week in Tallahassee about all of this. Join us along the way if you can. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments. Or once again, email always welcome at spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, every year during the Florida legislative session, one day is selected to become Space Day. And folks from around the state, but usually mostly from Florida Space Coast, make the trek to Tallahassee to spend the day and talk space. And that is going to happen here now this week on Wednesday. The effort is the responsibility of an industry committee of interested partners who each year elect a chairperson and supported by the folks at Space Florida. So the two men responsible for this year's activities are with us in the studio today. Let me introduce them to you. Making his record third appearance on Space Talk is Frank DiBello, president of Space Florida, and with him is this year's committee chairman, Mark Nappe, who also happens to be Florida's most senior manager for United Space Alliance, who, of course, is the main sponsor of Space Talk right here on WMMB. Frank, Mark, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Again.
Frank and Mark, good to have you back here. We talked to you at a launch not too long ago.
Yes, thanks, Jim.
And your first time in the studio. Well, I guess, Mark, we'll talk with you first as the chairman. Tell us about Space Day in general. What's it all about? How does it come together? Who's involved?
Well, Space Day is an opportunity for the Space Day partners, which is industry, NASA, Air Force, and local agencies, to go to Tallahassee and share with them the state of aerospace and space in Florida. The planning starts as early as August, and we spend several months putting together our thoughts, arranging the visits that will take place when we do go to Tallahassee. And this year, that is on the second and third of March. Frank and I co-chair this committee, and we meet routinely to get ready for that event. And as of today, we're ready to go.
So you all trek up here on Monday or Tuesday and spend the day or two there?
Yeah, we'll go up on Tuesday morning, have the first reception on Tuesday night, and then spend Wednesday visiting our legislators to spread the news and hopefully make them more aware of space and aerospace in Florida.
Now, as you meet with these legislators, and I know on these days it's a very quick visit. You're in and out of there in like 10-minute blocks, right? I mean, it's a fast deal.
Yeah, it is. We at most get about 10 minutes with each legislator.
Well, and I know you have a list of legislative priorities, which we'll talk about later in the program, but sort of setting the stage for all this as you go in, maybe Frank, to talk to these guys, and you've got them for such a short time, and we're going to talk longer today about this than you will with any of the lawmakers. What's the top-level message? What's really the big theme here for this year?
Well, there's a couple of them, but the key one is to highlight the fact that the industry is going to go through a crisis, a near-term crisis, centered around the fact that the shuttle will be retiring and that there'll be a near-term job loss impact of somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 7,000-plus positions that are direct jobs in the workforce, as well as an estimate of indirect job loss that's more than two times that. And in spite of the fact that the state has a challenging budget situation that it's facing this year, there has never been a more important time to reinvest in an industry that plays such a critical role in the state's overall economic well-being, and that's the space industry. The industry has been a proven catalyst for economic growth and for keeping Florida on the forefront of the innovation economy that we all seek for the state. So now is the time to continue to invest in it.
And these things that you're asking for, and again, we're going to get into the details later, but in general, these things that you're asking for is more than just money to run your organization. I mean, there's projects need to be done and things need to be built, facilities, economic plans, all that.
Absolutely. It is infrastructure money. It's investment money to enhance our ability to attract new companies. It's money set aside for retention and for training of the workforce to help move them to new work assignments. And put teeth into the fact that we're trying to establish Florida with a business environment that is second to none for doing space business.
Yeah, and Mark, again, going back to the plans here now for what happens during the day, I'm curious, is it one or two people, you train them? I mean, is this considered lobbying? Is this officially not lobbying? How do you get into that? You know, what's that all about?
Well, to lobby, you need to be a registered lobbyist, and we are not registered lobbyists. We're going in there not to lobby for any specific bills, but to educate.
Right.
So there'll be teams. I believe there's 25 teams or so that are made up of two or three or four or five people, and we'll go in and talk to the legislator. We have a prepared set of talking points. We have a brochure that we'll leave with the legislators in case they have more questions after we leave. Like I said, we'll have a very short period of time to just educate them as best we can on the issues that face us today.
And I don't know if anyone else has had a chance to be up in your state capitol and see session in action. I've been to a few space days in my career and spent some time up there doing this very, very task. And, you know, it is a circus up there. And it's not just that you guys are sneaking up there as you know, non-lobbyists. I mean, the place is packed with people doing the exact same thing you are. I mean, different. They're all wearing their different color shirts, and they all have their different concerns. And it's the Daughters of this, and the Association of that, and the Federation of this, and they're all trying to get their message out. And this is merely another big theme, you know, to go up there and get this stuff done.
I would think that is typically the case, but this year our state faces such a crisis in space and aerospace that I think we're at a distinct advantage this year to get the time and to get the attention of the legislators.
And do you think they have the attention is there? I mean, you know, we've been talking about let's be direct here. You know, we've been talking about the shuttle shutdown for 6 years now. We've known that we were going to lose thousands of jobs for a long time, and it's like you get the sense sometimes that some of these lawmakers are just now learning about it, just now figuring it out.
Well, I think that the Space Day Committee and, in fact, various companies and organizations have been doing a great job over the past couple of years at education and highlighting the issues that this industry was challenging. On the plus side, I can comment that the legislature gets it. There is a space caucus that's been formed this year, which has spread a very effective collaboration character to many of the space-related initiatives that are out there.
Right.
We used to have to go into many of these offices and explain what commercial space was or what space activity in the state did for the well-being of the citizens of the state. That's no longer the case in Tallahassee. The majority of legislators get it. Now we need to keep them focused on what the issues and challenges are this year and what we need to keep Florida in the lead as an aerospace global power.
Well, then let's review some of those numbers, those gee whiz numbers. And I didn't bring the printout of the brochure. I wish I had. I don't know if you've got them, but I remember something about, you know, that every county in the state now is touched in some way by aerospace.
We have done research to try to characterize the nature of the space industry in the state, and it's crystal clear that there is space activity in all 67 counties of the state. We'll be posting on the Space Florida website a map which you can actually click on and see the nature of the volume that is in each county, and we'll be showing that as we progress toward the 3x growth that we've set as a target for the space industry in the state out to the year 2020.
And as we look to the future and what Florida needs, and again, as we're gonna repeat what we've said before, and you know, it's more than just launch. It's more than just Brevard County. And is that message finally getting through?
Absolutely. I think the majority of legislators recognize that space is important to them and it's important to the state as a whole, not just because of work that's in their districts, but because space is a catalyst. First of all, it's pervasive in our everyday lives everywhere in the state and the nation, and it's a catalyst for creating the innovation and knowledge-based economy that we want. As space technologies advance, they tend to advance along the edges. In climate and weather monitoring, in agriculture and food production, in earth science, coastal monitoring and interdiction missions. And I could go on in the use of the International Space Station.
Oh, yeah.
All of these areas relate back to core economic segments of Florida's economy.
Now, let's talk for a moment about NASA's budget and the future of NASA. And Mark or Frank, I'm not sure which one of you wants to grab this, but in talking about, you know, where we're at now and not knowing where this is all going to go with Congress in terms of Constellation and the destinations and all the stuff I was talking about in the first segment, if you were to take NASA's budget right now and nothing changed, and we know that's a tough picture for Florida in the short term, but aren't there opportunities for Florida to to grab some money and some business that isn't our traditional shuttle and launch stuff, but other opportunities to go score big.
Yeah, I believe you're right, Jim. I assume you're talking about the proposed budget.
Right.
There are certainly opportunities. If you look at how this budget is laid out, there's a great deal of money that was set aside for research and development and technology and innovation. Those are not traditionally things that the Kennedy Space Center does, but it doesn't mean that we don't have the skills to go do that.
Oh, yeah.
So technology and innovation, for example, if there's a testing of new rockets or testing of new rocket components, that is certainly something that KSC can do. We have a population of design engineers and shops and labs that can do research and development. So there's plenty of talent here to do that kind of work. What we have to realize is that we're going to be in competition with other states and other centers who traditionally do that kind of work.
That's great. Well, look, Mark, Frank, we're going to stop here for a moment, take our five-minute built-in hold, get caught up on news, weather, and sports, and then we'll be back with more on Space Talk in the second half of the program. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust and performance you can count on. 321-768-1240, still the phone number you can call, *1240 for AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. And you can still send us email, spacetalking@AOL.com. By the way, you can also follow us on Twitter, our username spacetalking. We're happy to have you subscribe to our feed. And today's program, as always, can be heard live online right now at WMMBAM.com. And that's the website you can get all the rest of the goodies at, too, including a recording of today's program. We'll be up sometime tonight and will be available all week. And, of course, you can go to that website, WMMBAM.com, and hit enter keywords Space Talk and see the page dedicated to this show right here, and where we'll update you on things going on and other interesting stuff, links to books we've talked about, links to websites we talk about, and every once in an occasional while I'll even post some space news there. And speaking of news, usually right now at the bottom of the hour here, we spend a few moments with our friend Tracy Yates from United Space Alliance and get an update on what's happening at the Kennedy Space Center. And Tracy is actually in the studio today, but she's waving at me and saying, no, she doesn't want to talk. Defer to her boss, Mark Nappy. And so when you got the top guy here in the chair with the microphone, let's ask him. Before we continue talking about Space Day, Mark, tell us real quick, what's happening at KSC with the shuttles? How are things looking for launch in April? What's the quick update?
Well, last Sunday we landed this Endeavour at KSC. After a flawless mission, and the vehicle looks in great shape, and it's being processed for our next mission. Last Monday, Discovery rolled from the OPF, the Orbiter Processing Facility, over to the VAB, and we plan to roll that out early Tuesday morning, and okay. It's still on track for a launch on April 5th.
Wow, that's great. And, you know, we're always struck by all these last things. Everything's a last now with the shuttle, and, you know, the point was being made by the NASA commentators with Endeavour, that was beginning its last processing for its last mission, you know, the minute it lands. It just must be really weird over there to be thinking along those lines. Do you have any hopes of extending the shuttle? Is that kind of what you guys want to do, or are you just going to wait for your marching orders?
Well, obviously, we would support a extension of the shuttle if that's NASA's decision and that's the country's decision. And we believe that it's very safe, and we believe that it's a very doable situation.
Well, good. Well, we'll see what happens. And by the way, I want to jump in here real quick and let everyone know that overnight the United Launch Alliance released the news of the Delta IV launch for this week has slipped a day. There was a faulty steering control valve on a solid rocket motor on the Delta IV, which had to be replaced. So launch is now set for this Wednesday, March 3rd, between 6:18 and 7:18 p.m. Eastern Time. Weather forecast is 80% go, and Mark, that's happening on Space Day. Is that going to be a Is that a good thing, a bad thing? Is that going to cause you any problems with your plans?
It causes no problems. We've had a shuffle of people because obviously some of our Space Day partners support that launch, but they're still sending representatives up to Tallahassee to support.
6:18, not quite dark, from the 22nd floor of the Capitol. But I don't know if you could see it or not.
Well, we'll look for it.
I think we ought to try, shouldn't we? You know, I know my dad can see Space Station shuttle launch from there every once in a while. If the angle's just right and the clouds are clear, he gets a chance to see that. So I don't know, maybe from the top of the building. Okay, well, let's get back to Space Day. And again, to remind everyone, we do have Frank DiBello here, president of Space Florida, Mark Nappe from United Space Alliance. And we were talking about the plans for Space Day. Let's talk about some of your messages. There's a series of legislative priorities, some things, very specific things that our lawmakers are going to propose and push for in the session this year. And maybe we could, Frank, run down through some of those. Let's start with your budget, Florida.
Be happy to. The governor's budget request for the space industry this year is $32.6 million, which contains a number of very targeted elements, most of those targeted at near-term business opportunities in response to what we're calling the crisis that we're facing associated with the retirement of the shuttle and the need to rebuild and refocus, revitalize a lot of our industry. There's $10 million in that budget, which is aimed at putting teeth into the financing assistance projects that we have. Those mm-hmm. are very specific near-term opportunities. There's another $3 million which is expanded business development and recruitment services, again, for very targeted projects that will enable us to advance the cause of bringing those companies and opportunities to Florida. There is $3.2 million, which is workforce training and job retraining services. Most of that work is accomplished by the local workforce development board. But I can tell you that it is very critical to being able to move much of the core talent that we have that is not easily placed into next-generation space programs mm-hmm. into related, very defined job opportunities. So it's targeted toward providing additional certifications. There is some counseling and assistance in job and career refocusing, but the majority of it goes toward training them for specific job opportunities, so it's very, very valuable.
And I've heard some, I guess, complaint is the right word, or at least concerns from people who maybe aren't completely familiar with it, that this money is, let's see, what am I trying to ask, Frank? I'm trying to ask you, this is not just about rewriting resumes. This is not just about how to format a resume and email it to somebody. This is true recertification training.
It is absolutely. We're working with a number of employers who have job needs. They're defining the requirements, and then the Workforce Development Board has been working with the sources of potential talent in a collaborative way to bring that talent up to the level that they need for the new jobs. You might ask Mark to comment on that as to whether he views this as valuable.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Mark.
I think our workforce has been greatly appreciative of the efforts that have been put forth so far by Brevard Workforce. You're right, this money is available not only for resume writing and interviewing and preparing for a new job, but it's also for offering recertifications. A couple of instances where, for example, we have technicians that work on aircraft, but some of them don't have FAA licenses. So mm-hmm. this money's been put aside so that they can achieve an FAA license with the experience that they have so they can go work someplace on an aircraft.
And is that process happening now, or is it about to happen? I mean, do you have people that have gone through this already?
Yes, it's been happening for the past year, and a great deal of people have run through the process and, again, are greatly appreciative of the efforts that have been put forth so far.
And I want to put in a plug here for Mr. DiBello, and Mark, I hope that you can agree to me because Frank's too humble about it. But, you know, to see the governor recommend this kind of level of money and see this kind of dollar figures for a variety of space-related projects, we haven't had that in this state for a long time. We've not seen that for a long time. We've had a hard enough time getting Space Florida budget passed at a decent level. And now here it comes, and it just so happens it comes the first session after this man takes over as president of Space Florida. And I got to say, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to Frank and his team for moving things and changing things around and working with folks to make some of that happen. Would you agree that that's a good thing?
I would absolutely agree. We've had a humongous change in the efforts in the state of Florida, and it's greatly due to Frank's efforts. And however, we have a long way to go to catch up with some of the other states.
Well, that's right. So Frank's got his work cut out for him.
Well, let me make a comment, Jim, if I may, and I appreciate the compliment, but I also have to tell you that in large part, the governor's office and the legislature recognizes the importance of the space industry to the state, and the budget request this year reflects recognition that it's going through a crisis,
right,
and that there is a real need to reinvest in it. That's why in that $32.6 million, there is also some $12.5 million approximately that is targeted toward infrastructure improvements to allow us to better position the state and our facilities and assets, including our workforce, to attract new business opportunities. And there are a number of these.
And talk about some of these other things that are on the some job credits, incentives, and or tax credits and whatnot. You've got a whole list of things here.
Well, we do. There's another bill which we've called the Commercial Launch Zone Initiatives, mm-hmm. which are a number of tax incentives, including a net operating loss feature as well as a carry forward feature for those that's very, very attractive to industry. There is an aerospace jobs retention tax credit that is really an incentive for job creation, patterned after something that was done in Oklahoma, and this is sponsored by Senator Altman, but it's a very powerful bill, and it adds a nice tool to our arsenal. And then there is an R&D tax credit bill that we are very excited by. All of these are aimed at creating a better business environment for companies that are looking to do space business. They're attracted here not only by our heritage and infrastructure, but the talent pool that we have. It's a relatively available, skilled mm-hmm. workforce, and then that business environment that surrounds it makes it a 1-2-3 punch.
Well, and to be able to compete with the other states, you mentioned Oklahoma, this is about time. You know, we need this. We absolutely need this kind of incentive to bring people in, and without it, what happens?
Well, without it, I think we stand to lose the global leadership position that Florida has had mm-hmm. as an aerospace state for a very, very long time. But I don't think that's likely to happen. I think that the legislature recognizes it. I think that there is a rich history and robustness of, as I've mentioned, infrastructure and talent that's here that the industry globally recognizes. And we're reaching globally to attract companies here who want to use the International Space Station as a place to do research or who are interested in doing other kinds of space activity. And we're getting the message out that this is the place to do business.
Yeah, that's outstanding. That's outstanding. And I'm sure we could always wish for more, but this is a nice big chunk of stuff. And I think if we got all this passed, we'd be in great shape.
We would be a step in the right direction, yes.
That's great. Well, look, we're going to take one more break and then get some final thoughts from Frank DiBello and Mark Nappe. And we'll be back in just a moment right here on WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's Space Talk, once again sponsored by United Space Alliance. I want to take 30 seconds here to tell you that Brevard Community College will feature the lecture NASA Exploration at a Crossroad on Friday, March 12th at 7 p.m. in the Cocoa Campus Planetarium and Observatory. Russell Romanella, the NASA's Associate Director for Engineering at the Kennedy Space Center, will discuss some of NASA's incredible achievements and plans for the future. And then you can tour the observatory and hopefully watch the stars through telescopes, clear skies anticipated, compliments of the Brevard Astronomical Society. The event is free and open to the public, once again, Friday, March 12th at 7 p.m. And for more information about the BCC Space and Astronomy Lecture Series, call 321-433-7653. That's 321-433-7653. Well, again, final moments here with Frank DiBello and Mark Nappe. And Mark, as industry professionals go up to inform and educate our lawmakers, our legislators, it does kind of beg the question, what can the average Florida resident do to help out in this effort, especially now that our folks are in session? What's a good thing that they need to do to plug in and get involved?
Well, it's important to express your personal views to your legislators, both at the state and federal level. The Brevard County Commissioners, specifically Robin Fisher, has put together a website called safespace.us. Mm-hmm. And there you can put your personal point of views in. You can mail your state legislators or your federal legislators or even the White House, where this plan originates, and let them know how you feel. And that's, again, safespace.us.
Yeah, it's a great website, and we've talked to Commissioner Fisher about it in the past when it was first started. Tremendous success in getting letters written and communications to the White House, and now, of course, during these next few weeks, the efforts to get our Florida lawmakers involved and in supportive of all this is absolutely key. This is the time to do it. These are the time to make the phone calls, send the faxes and the emails, and get that job done. If you want to go up to Tallahassee yourself and walk up in front and down the Capitol with a sign, you'll be joined by lots of friends up there, because they're all up there with their signs. And as we look forward now to these next few weeks, and then guys, really to the future of the space program during 2010 and beyond, what are your thoughts now? You heard some new things from Bolden this week. Congress is angry. The White House is doing their thing. We got our own concerns here in Florida. What's your sense, Frank? Are we happy? Are we excited? Are we optimistic? We're worried. How do you characterize it?
Well, the things that I'm very excited about, and clearly I realize that there are some things in the president's budget that I was disappointed in. Number one of which was the lack of a bold exploration goal.
Yeah.
Because without that, we tend to embark on a technology advancement path, but it begs the question of technology advancement to where?
To where?
The if you study NASA's history, there have been times in the past when the agency was embarked on a technology exploration initiative without clear direction as to where they were trying to take it, and there was some floundering that went on in the past. But having said that, within the president's budget, there are opportunities that we can, in fact, reach for significant opportunities. There is an increase overall in the budget. There is money marked for commercial space activity, which Florida is well positioned to support. Their support of the International Space Station, which we hope to position Florida to remain or to become the ground node for support of that. There are a whole lot of technology exploration initiatives, which Florida skills and workforce are well positioned to support. So I think no matter how this is debated on Capitol Hill in the next 4 to 6 months, and it will be, because there is not right now political clarity, and we think that there will be with respect to NASA's future mission, that'll be helpful.
And Frank, you can handle this question. We just got this question in on email, and I'm obligated to ask it to you, and I do want to ask it. It's from Walt from Rockledge. Walt writes, $32 million for space is great, but the governor's budget also requests $75 million for film production in the state. Are film production workers considered high-tech as are space workers? Do the fiscal revenues from film production remain in the state, or do they go back to Hollywood? I don't know if you know about that, but within the broad picture of priorities, is this where it needs to be? I guess we could always use more money.
Well, I think you have to look at the nature of the innovation economy, and today filmmaking has become a high-tech art. It uses a lot of digital imagery and a digital capabilities that are in the state, and most of that money will probably stay in the state as we attract film production here, and it also takes up a lot of hotel nights and mm-hmm. causes a whole variety of economic multiply effects back into the economy.
So
it's not
hurt.
Money poorly spent.
Right, right. And of course, we talk about innovation, exploration, the idea that you can go do telepresence, you know, and all that technology, it's all kind of combined. Well, we'll talk about that another time. Mark, let me get your thoughts here. We have about another minute to go. Optimistic, pessimistic? What do you feel?
Well, I think it's important to understand we have two problems. One is a long-term problem to bring aerospace into the state to make up for the losses that we could experience in the short term. In the long term, I'm very optimistic because I think Frank is the right person to lead that effort and get us in the right position. For the short term, I'm concerned. And I am optimistic, though, that through this debate, we'll have an opportunity to affect the debate and affect the final plan that the administration finally agrees to.
And we're worried about the short term, Mark. You know, I mean, no matter what happens, we're not going to save every job And I don't know if some people are accepting that right now. We're going to lose a significant number of people because we have to. As the program evolves, you don't need the standing army to do the new vehicles. So we do have to kind of go through this valley to get to the next peak.
You're absolutely correct. And my message all along for the last 2 years is that we have got to work to just lessen the impact to our state.
Yeah. Yeah. And any other last thoughts, Frank?
No, I think that we've been conscious of what's coming. There's been planning activity to respond to it. And you're right, while we won't save every position, we can, in fact, place a lot of those people into other industry areas that have similar skills requirements, whether they be clean energy applications, high-speed rail applications, and I can go on. There is a list. So it's not doom and gloom. We just have to work hard to make those happen in the right time frame.
Great. Frank DiBello, Mark Nappy, thanks for being on the program today, and good luck in the mission on Tuesday. It looks like I might be joining you up there and standing and trying to look pretty and tell the story too. So we'll see you on Tuesday or on Wednesday, I guess, up in Tallahassee. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, Mark, thanks. Hey, let's look forward to next week on Space Talk. My guest is going to be Jeffrey Manber. He is the author of the book Selling Peace, which tells the story of his involvement in getting the first U.S. commercial payload flown to the Russian Mir space station at a time when NASA was just recovering from the Challenger accident and the Soviets were still considered to be the evil empire. And then it got crazy from there. With the currently anticipated reliance we are about to have on Russian rockets getting our astronauts to the space station, a seat sold to us on a commercial basis, Manber's story and insights into how Russia is viewing all this should be interesting to hear. Again, that's going to be next week on Space Talk at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, in the meantime, stay in touch with us at WMMBAM.com throughout the week. Reminding you for the last time, Space Talk is brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and even as the NFL Combine is underway in Indianapolis, let me remind you once again, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, so long as the food is served hot and the drinks are served cold. You're listening to WMMB.